This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The legal profession can trace its history back for centuries, and it's always been evolving. In today's digital age, it's becoming more technology-oriented, with terms like e-lawyering entering the legal lexicon. This afternoon, we'll look at a new program at Northern Kentucky University that aims to develop Renaissance lawyers for the information age. And coming up in Focus on Technology, Google's latest project, figuring out what we look like when we're well so we can know when we're becoming sick. But first, during her career, Linda Gradstein has reported on many key events in the Middle East. She was NPR's primary reporter in Israel for almost two decades. Today, she's the Mideast Bureau Chief for the Media Line. She joins us this afternoon to talk about what she observed in the Middle East and her thoughts on the current state of the region. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Linda, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Tell me about the Media Line. This is new to me. I've not heard of it before.
The Media Line is a nonprofit organization. We're an American news agency that covers the entire Middle East, and we try to provide context and background that we think is missing. And the interesting thing is that our reports appear in both Israeli publications and Palestinian publications. So, for example, the same story that I do can be on Ynet, which is an Israeli news site, and I'll translate it into Arabic in Al-Quds, which is a Palestinian paper. And the idea is to try to get the conversation started between the two sides.
How long has that been in existence?
It's been in existence for over 12 years. We also do a daily news brief in which we do a roundup of the news events through the Middle East, which with some context. And anyone who wants to subscribe to our newsletter can send an email to editor@themedialine.org. And of course, there's no charge for that newsletter.
Linda, you've got an interesting background. You hold degrees in foreign service and Arab studies from Georgetown University. So how and why did you get into journalism?
I sort of fell into journalism, actually. I was over in the Middle East, and originally I was going to join the Foreign Service. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to be the Israeli ambassador to Washington or the American ambassador to Israel, but I was going to make peace in the Middle East. That really was my goal. And till that happened, I needed a way to make some money. So I started working as a translator. I speak both Hebrew and Arabic, and I worked as a translator for various journalists. And then I realized that journalism isn't really rocket science, and that I just enjoyed it. And my first, I remember clearly, up until 1987, there was no border between Israel and Gaza. Think about now after this summer's war. But there were hundreds of thousands of workers who would get in there on buses every morning at about 4 o'clock in the morning and come into Israel to work. And I came with the correspondent from the Los Angeles Times to interview some of these workers. And we drove down. We left Jerusalem at, I don't know, about 2 o'clock in the morning. And we get down, and the people are getting on these buses. It's still dark out to come to work in Israel. And we jumped on a random bus and started interviewing people, and I was hooked. And that's how I became a journalist.
By the way, what would be your advice for students who want to go into journalism, especially for international journalism?
Go there and do it. In other words, get on a plane, show up, make connections with some of your local papers. If they want to do radio, they should call you up and say, if I put together a radio piece, would you put it on your show? And I'm a big fan of just going out and doing it. I think journalism is a craft, and you can learn it by doing it. There is actually various journalism programs overseas. For example, I teach in a summer program called IEI Media, in which we take students and they come to Jerusalem for a month, and we get them out in the field and reporting. So that's really the way I think to do it, is just to go over there. I'm a big fan of both travel and of having those experiences and seeing how things are different and trying to function. Even if you pay your own way, you know, you do your work on spec and you bring it back and you bring it to somebody and say, you know, can you do something with this?
Does it help to be able to speak more than one language if you're going to take that career route?
It does help. I mean, I studied, I speak fluent Hebrew and Arabic as well. In a place like Israel, a lot of people speak English, and you really can manage. In the West Bank and Gaza, some might speak English, but it really does help to have the languages. On the other hand, I wouldn't say to somebody, if you don't have the languages, don't come. It's certainly a bonus, but you can manage without it.
What are some of the major stories that you've covered in the Middle East?
Oh, I've covered so many. I mean, from most recently, the past summer's war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, which went on for about 7 weeks and kind of ended in a draw, the war with Hezbollah in Lebanon, where just this last week marked the 19th anniversary of the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin, the Israeli prime minister. And I remember, in fact, that I was on all night with NPR through the night for about 12 hours straight, and my voice went, excuse me. And that was a very emotional time for Israelis. I've covered about a dozen Israeli elections. I've covered the Ethiopian Jewish immigration to Israel from the airlift from Ethiopia, the tech story. There are so many stories. The pace of news there sometimes is so fast, it's kind of hard to keep up. There's always so many events going on. But as a reporter, it's just such a great place to be. And people on both sides of this, the Israeli side and the Palestinian side, welcome you into their homes, welcome you into their lives. And I really feel that it's been a privilege to have the career that I've had.
You also covered the Persian Gulf War. What was that like?
Well, I have a very funny story because I had just started working for NPR, and you had to choose a room because there was fear that Saddam Hussein was going to fire chemical Scud missiles. And after much thought, I chose the kitchen, because if I was going to get stuck somewhere for many hours, I wanted it to be the kitchen. And there was an alert. The first Scud missiles came in at about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I put my gas mask on, and NPR went live to me. And my mother had just turned on the radio, and I said to them in NPR, I said, "Can you hear me through the gas mask, or should I take it off?" And she starts yelling at the radio, "Don't take it off! Don't take it off!"
What are some of the stories that you've covered more recently?
One of the things that I enjoy at the Media Line is I do a different story virtually every day. And I really get the opportunity to do all kinds of stories, not only Israel-based stories. I've done stories in Lebanon. I've done stories in the Gulf. Most recently, I did an economic story in Israel about why food prices are so high in Israel. I did a story. I've done, obviously some political stories. I did a nice feature about a 95-year-old woman named Anna Halperin, who came to do a dance of peace for Israeli and Palestinian women. That was a lot of fun.
If you had to name one of the stories that you've covered that defines the turmoil and the tension that surrounds this part of the world, which one would you say best does that?
Oh, it's so difficult. I mean, and the tensions are so different in so many different places. I think, what we're seeing now with these tensions over access to a holy site that's holy to both Jews and Muslims. Jews call it the Temple Mount. Palestinians, Muslims call it the Haram al-Sharif, or the Noble Sanctuary. And I think there it sort of encapsulates so many of the tensions, because it's both a national tension and a religious tension at the same time.
Linda, critics have said that you have a pro-Israel bias in your reporting, but there are also critics on the other side, like the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America, which a few years back called you National Public Radio's chronically pro-Palestinian Israel reporter. How do you respond to people who say that you're biased in your reporting?
First of all, some people say that if you're getting attacked by both sides, you must be doing something right. I understand that people are coming. It's a very emotional issue for American Jews who care deeply about Israel, for Palestinian Americans who care deeply about the future of Palestine. So I do understand the emotions that are behind it. And I think, journalism in general is accused of being biased by both sides all the time. The question to me is not, is there bias? And I don't think that most journalists really are biased. I think it's a question of, how do you provide context? How do you provide background? How far do you go back? There are times that Israelis say, well, you have to go back to 1929 to the Arab riots. And Palestinians say, you have to go back to 1948 to the Nakba, to the, creation of the State of Israel, which displaced so many Palestinians. So I think it's sort of like trying to thread the eye of a needle. I try very hard to be as balanced as I can. I don't think journalists can basically be objective because we're all people and we all come with our own baggage. I do try to be balanced. I try very hard to choose language that's not incendiary, that's descriptive and that's accurate without being incendiary.
So balanced and perhaps even try to be fair as well.
Yes.
Do you think that since the criticism comes from both sides, that it really reflects the difficult, sensitive nature of the Israeli-Palestinian issue?
It is very difficult. And I think, you know, even in Jerusalem, where Israelis and Palestinians live next to each other, there's very little contact between them, unfortunately, and in the last few months, even less. For example, there's a light rail, a brand new, relatively new light rail system that was supposed to run through Palestinian neighborhoods of Jerusalem and through Jewish neighborhoods of Jerusalem. The idea being that at least people would be riding the same train, you know, similar to what we try to do at the Media Line, where we try to get the conversation started between the two sides, maybe if they're riding the same train. And because of the riots, there are some of these light rail cars have been attacked. Palestinians have very few Palestinians ride the cars because they're afraid of attacks by extremist Jews. Some of the trains have been damaged. So it's just an example of how difficult the situation is right now.
We got a question by Twitter, Linda. They were asking about the dangers that reporters these days face in the Middle East compared to years ago.
Well, certainly in Syria, it's very dangerous. And in fact, Stephen Sotloff, who was the second journalist who was killed by ISIS, worked for us for many years. And our CEO, Felice Friedson, was in fact one of the last people to speak to him. And she was the one who unfortunately had to tell his parents that he had been killed. So it is dangerous. In terms of, you know, where I'm based in Israel and the West Bank, I don't think there really is a lot of danger. But, you know, to meet anyone who, you know, covers Syria these days is really it's quite dangerous. At the same time, it's quite important because I think the world does need to know what's going on. So I have a lot of admiration for my brave colleagues who are doing it despite the danger.
Why is it important for us to understand what's going on in the Middle East?
Oh, I think it's crucial because I think the United States is, you know, has a crucial role to play in the Middle East. And if you don't understand what's going on, how can you have a foreign policy that's effective? So I think it really is very important. And one of the sort of unfortunate things that I see in journalism is that a lot of large newspapers closed a lot of their bureaus because it's just so expensive to get that coverage. But I think it's crucial. The United States is still the world superpower and still has to play a role. And we see that, you know, with American troops in Afghanistan and in Iraq and, you know, now with the coalition-led involvement against the airstrikes against ISIS, you know, there's no one else to go to but the United States.
A coworker and I were talking about this earlier today, and we were talking about how it seems that in all of our lives, there's always been conflict in the Middle East. And looking at the region today, what's your assessment? Is the situation getting better or is it getting worse?
Well, it does seem to be getting worse. For example, you know, the ISIS seems to be gaining ground. There was a terrorist group in Egypt called Ansar Beit al-Maqdis that was affiliated with al-Qaeda. They have now sworn loyalty to ISIS. You have the Syrian civil war, which has killed so many people and doesn't show any sign of ending. You have instability in Egypt, in Jordan. So I unfortunately don't see the situation moving towards stability. That said, I think when you talk to people in these countries, they really want democracy, they want stability, they want the rule of law, they want human rights. And I think the United States has a really important role in trying to help make that happen.
Do you see any hope in the younger generation? Do they seem to feel differently about, in particular, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
Well, you know, the truth is that there's sort of two contradictory things going on at the same time. On one side, polls show that two-thirds of the Israeli public and two-thirds of the Palestinian public want a peace deal. And the deal that everyone's talking about is a two-state solution of an independent Palestinian state next to Israel on the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem. Yet each side doesn't trust the other side, and each side said there's no leadership on the other side. So I don't really see anything happening or any changes happening at all, unfortunately.
So you don't have a very positive opinion of the possibility of peace in the region.
I go back and forth. It depends if you catch me on an optimist day or a pessimist day. I mean, the truth is the outline of a peace deal is clear. And apparently during the Vietnam peace talks, they argued about the shape of the table for months. And eventually they did come to a peace deal. So everybody knows what a peace deal is going to look like. You just have to have the leadership and the courage on both sides to go ahead and do it.
Linda, you'll be talking in Cincinnati tonight. Tell us about that and give us a preview of what you'll be talking about.
Well, some of the issues that
we talked about today.
And I'll expand on it a little bit. I want to sort of give people who come a picture of what it's really like these days, sort of a view from the front. I flew in just yesterday, and I'll be speaking at Tangemin Hall at 7 p.m., and the public is more than happy to come, and there's, of course, no charge, and there's even refreshments at the end.
Well, you can't beat that. Linda, thank you so much for being here this afternoon. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Linda Gradstein is Mideast Bureau Chief for the Media Line. After the break, a new program at NKU aims to develop lawyers for the information age. And in focus on technology, Google's latest project, figuring out what we look like when we're well so we can know when we're becoming sick. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.